You don't own me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't own me. Don't tie me down, 'cause I'd never stay.
It's time for the Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com. This is Paul Daly here with my wife Caroline.
Hey guys.
And my sister Kate.
Hey.
And today we're going to discuss the first episode of Hulu's Handmaid's Tale.
This one's called Offred. What a funky ass name, y'all.
We learn more about that, though.
Yeah, we do. Off Caroline. All week I had to tell him to quit calling me Off Paul. So, you know, it's cool. It's cool. It's all right.
Tit for tat.
Exactly. Tit it up over there. If you're just new to our podcast, we're going to speak by characters and we're going to give you a little bit of just intro to each of them, given that this is the first episode. A lot of you guys probably watched episodes 1 through 3 already, but we're going to stick to only the information we picked up in episode 1 because we know that some of you guys are listening to this a year from now and will be like, I don't understand why they've chose to clump 1 through 3 together when it's all bingeable now. So we're going to go episode by episode, not scene by scene. So you're not going to hear a timeline from us. So if things seem out of order to you from what you watched, it's just because we're collecting the information together by character. So we're going to start off with our title character, Offred. And Kate, what was your first opinion of old Offred? Did you watch Mad Men? Do you know the actress Elizabeth Moss?
Yes, I watched Mad Men. I knew her from that, and I knew her from West Wing way back in the day. And she was always really a side character for me in those shows. So to see her in what seems to be like she's taken the lead in this show, a change from that.
I super love seeing her in modern regular clothes with like modern regular hair.
Oh, blonde hair?
Yeah. And like a normal hairstyle, not those goofy bangs and the goofy ponytail mess I hate. So yeah, I felt like automatically I was already like way more in love with her as a character than I have been in previous shows. Though I love Peggy Olson, don't get me wrong, I didn't relate to her. But she seemed actually like of this time and I could appreciate her as a fellow mom and whatnot.
Absolutely.
Since she's our main POV character, we actually get to hear her thoughts.
So do you guys like that or does it bug you? Because I've heard people say both.
It's true to the source material that we get to hear her thoughts. And I know that, you know, things being translated from books often lose that entirely. And whenever it is implemented, see David Lynch's Dune, it doesn't work. In this, we have a character who is forced at the end of a gun, you know, to act this certain way. And if you don't, big trouble. So we do have to know what else is going on inside her.
Absolutely. By the end of the episode, when we see her make kind of a revelation about what her goal is, we have to know that there's kind of a second narrative going on inside her head that's keeping her alive.
I like that. So what is that goal?
She's staying alive for her daughter.
So it's a survival for my loved ones kind of story here that we're working with. And I agree with you. I had to know that part about her because this was confusing, you know, at the beginning. A lot of people are saying, I'm very confused. I feel like I don't understand the rules of this society that they're working off of. And I submitted on our Facebook chat room that I invite all you guys to come and check out and discuss with us that the whole reason why they made it kind of a little confusing and anxious and you felt very like popping from one time to another, going back with these flashbacks, that's how Offred feels. And that's how everybody's feeling, very off kilter, very confused, very out of place. And that seemed right. That's how I felt as a viewer.
The only person who seemed, I don't know, comfortable is not the right word, but I don't know, like he knew something else anyway, was the commander. Everyone else had like their buns turned very tightly and clenching all their cheeks and everything. And meanwhile, he just kind of like saunters in and saunters out. And
intrigue. Okay, so let's finish up with Offred, because I want to hit up on the commander and also Aunt Lydia, who I would say is very comfortable with her role. So I'm going to say, so here's some tips that we have figured out from Offred's first episode. So apparently there's some sort of situation that has happened here in America. People are trying to get out. And so she said to her friend that she was trying to cross in Maine, and that's where she had gotten captured. And we actually saw the chase scene I thought it was pretty riveting. I appreciated the part where her child made a little squawk and it was like, shut your mouth. You know, like it was like, oh my God, come on. We assumed that was her husband that was driving. Turns out that yes, it was. And that he was indeed shot. That scene for me where they ripped Hannah away from her. Oh, that would have been the scariest thing ever. The men with machine guns that you're running from. I can't even imagine being in that position.
Do you think, either of you, that he was shot not because they were fleeing, but more as a we don't like interracial couples thing? Because they seem to have a lot of rules, and they're not. There are people of various colors in the show in various different roles, but you know, I kind of took it as, well, maybe they did that to be like extra about the regime.
The only thing that I'm going to say, a big fat question mark on that, is that there were other handmaids of color, and the thought that there were elites of color that would have been a both a black mother and a black father then producing a black child seems maybe not going to be true. And so if she would be a black handmaiden to a white elite couple, then can they afford to be anti-interracial? I'm not sure. I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence yet,
right,
they were pure white people only, because I don't think you would have seen any variation in the handmaids colors at all. I think they would all been white.
Just something about the way that they put him down, basically, just because he was running, that's felt cleansing-y, you know?
Well, I thought too, though, maybe that had to do with they just don't have enough spaces for people who are drivers or, you know, something else that's not, you're not an elite and you're not producing the babies, so then we don't need you here.
I agree with you, exactly. And I would say that he had little value is the word that I was going to use, you know, where she was very valuable and even the child was very valuable. I wonder if they would have shot the child if it was a boy, but because it was a girl, you know, they kept the child. Then I didn't know if it was more about even the fact that he was a man, that we don't need that many men, to be honest with you.
They are at war.
We never saw a body, and I always go back to that. They told us the husband was shot, but we never saw him dead. And so the idea that they could have sent him off to a colony to be a fighter, to me, still stands. As a viewer, if you don't see a dead body, you don't see a dead body. So I know you guys have both read the book, and I do not want to hear if the book is different. And here's the comment I do want to say about that. If any of you guys have read the book and you guys feel very comfortable that you know the outcomes of the various characters and how this is going to fly, I do want to point out to you that, you know, Walking Dead is an active comic currently. And if you had said something like, well, Carol died and blah, 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 you'd be dead wrong. Carol's still here and still doing her thing. So go slow if you already have read the book, and assuming that you know what's going to happen in the story. Just because I think the TV, you know, producers have every right to change it up to what works on the screen. And as all of us fall in love with various characters, that's what happened to a lot of different characters on shows. They're supposed to come on for a scene.
Better Call Saul much?
Yeah, yes, Better Call Saul much. You end up with a whole show. There could be a Moira show later, you know? So who knows? Like, I'm just going to not make any assumptions.
And, you know, we always talk about also possible production perspectives that may feed into it. I mean, Hulu is not Netflix and they're not HBO. Even though this feels like they're doing a really good show, on the other hand, these are not bustling cities that they're populating with extras. Like you just pointed out, there's just not that many people around for some reason. I think it's because they don't have the money for that kind of thing, but there may be a story reason too.
I think that they probably keep the areas that are these, where the elite homes, kind of green zone-esque of colony, where I think it's very, only if you have to be in this area, this is where you are, because I think they probably have a lot of the handmaidens. If you think about it, the best way to control everything would be in a very tight area, and you wouldn't want a lot of extraneous people at all. You don't want people who could steal babies. You don't want people who could,
right,
you could help a handmaiden in any way. You don't want anyone with any ideas being anywhere close. So you got to control the population, at least in this space where all this very valuable reproduction is going on.
Yeah, we have not seen where the other half lives, basically. Mm-mm,
not even a little bit. So we did find out also that this is Offred's second post as a handmaiden, which already gives you the idea that they are not locked into these families for life.
And it helps gives us some idea of how long this regime has been around. It's not crystal clear just yet. After we had watched this, we had started to make the idea maybe 2 years.
I think two or three at the most, because Hannah, I think, was only 5 or 6 when she was snatched away from Alfred. And Alfred says she's 8. So then, So I'm just going on the kid's age and I'm just going on the actress. So, I mean, the little girl could have really supposed to have been 3 years old, but she didn't look it. I mean, she was running and talking and...
And the chase scene at the beginning of the show, her hair is just past her shoulders. And then the scene after the ceremony when she's out in the garden, her hair is down far on her back. So just from like simple hair growth terms, you know, she's been around a while.
Okay.
Absolutely. So we're guessing somewhere around this maybe 3 year.
Okay.
3 year mark.
Somewhere in there. Right? Yeah.
So enough for things to be going, but not enough for everything to become like this is supposed to be anywhere near normal. So the family that she gets assigned to is the Waterford family. And we have the wife, Serena Joy, and the husband, Commander Fred. What'd you guys feel of these two?
Oh, that was a passionate, burning love that I saw between those two.
Dude, are they assigned their wives as well?
They must be.
I kind of think they must be as well. I mean, all we really understand about Serena Joy is that she is not able to have children. I can't figure out the jobs of the wives yet. I mean, she doesn't seem like she's head of household in the way that we would have all known, like from Victorian times or something. She doesn't seem to run the show.
Right. She has more rights than the other women, but no responsibility at all.
I don't know what makes you say she has more rights than the other women.
Well, not all of them, obviously. I mean, there's still the commander's secret room that no one can go in. I mean, one woman gets to boss another woman around. I guess I'm going to say that one has more rights than the one getting bossed.
Okay, so I mean, so she has underlings, if you will. Yeah. But I don't know if she has rights. Like, I don't know that she can just walk out of that house anytime she wants. And I don't know that she certainly can't say or do anything she wants. I think it's, everyone has their personal jails. We just don't know what hers.
I didn't say it was a ton of rights. I just said more than the other women.
So what did you guys think of Fred? Like, did he seem like a bad, gross guy, or what did you guys make of him?
Having read the book, I want to hold back any judgment that I have from the book because this is the show, not the book.
And it's only episode 1. So anything you know about, you know, episode 2 or 3, we only have had these little snippets with Commander Fred, only just them being introduced. And
he seems busy. He seems distracted.
Yeah.
He does not seem at all involved in anything going on in the home, including the ceremonies. I'm doing air quotes. Right? the ceremonies.
Did the hand on the hip during the ceremony, did that clue you into that he wasn't really into it?
Even all of that. So even when they met, like, she was like, oh, this is our new handmaid. And he's like, yeah. You can't know from the first episode whether he has to be calculated with his level of interest in the handmaiden, especially in front of his wife, because, hello, he can't be like, oh, really? What's your name? Tell me all about, you know. He's not supposed to give a shit about her, and he very effectively didn't give a shit about her, you know, like, just was like, okay, whatever. So I agree with you, very distracted. And that reproduction, though that is the main game from Offred's point of view, I would submit that for Fred, the war and his commander position is probably, if you asked him what's your most important role, I think he would say that, not procreating.
Absolutely. Isn't it interesting that, and I don't know what to make of it yet, that he's regarded as a commander, he's called a commander, but he looks like a banker or a lawyer. I mean, he's walking around with things that look like ledgers and books and things like that.
Yeah, and you know, who knows? He could just be like the supply commander.
Right.
Like, where he keeps like, how many peanut butters did anyone eat this week? I don't know.
I think that's just the term they use for the men, is commander.
So it's the same like...
Right.
Right. It's master and commander is what you call me, kind of talk. All right. Well, so then that explains something. I also kind of felt like, now this is going to be between Kate and I, if they were looking for the like best genetic material to work with, I mean, he was like, okay or whatever, but he certainly wasn't like the strongest. You know, like if you describe like an athletic looking man or somebody who is like very, I mean, I guess it's just like, can your sperm swim? I guess that's
absolutely
part of this game, right?
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's like...
maybe he knows where the bodies are buried or something.
I don't know. It's just, it didn't seem like to me, it's like Serena Joy, I mean, she's tall. She's classically an attractive woman. It makes sense to me that, you know, they would keep her in the elite class in a lot of ways. But he wasn't, the classic kind of guy I would have put in that role. I don't know about the casting. I don't know how I feel yet.
Not from a casting perspective, but from how you were talking about his personal genetics, since they had kind of nailed down that the problem went down to the ovaries, whether your ovaries work or not, they probably had enough information on the other half of what they were looking for in male sperm providers. And so maybe he fit the bill in that regard and was there for no other reason, but he had strong sperm.
Since we mentioned Elizabeth Moss plays Offred, Joseph Fiennes plays the commander.
Oh, dang. That makes total sense because I think he looks a lot like who his brother?
Rafe. Right. Is how you say that.
No, I'm just asking, are they, that's how they're related?
They are.
Not like uncle or.
No.
I didn't know what the relation was. So that whole family does a real good Nazi commander type impression, don't they? Well, they might know what
Rafe
they're
going to play. Rafe is particularly famous for that.
You might know what they're going to be for Halloween that year if you're just going to go how you best act.
Joseph is most famous for having played William Shakespeare.
I'm not saying he's unattractive. I'm saying if you're trying to repopulate the species, you would think that there might be like very classically attractive traits that I don't know. Maybe it is for other people. I don't know.
You think like Tom Brady's getting like worked out like crazy.
Yeah, I do think there's just like a milking room for him.
Give him like 5 handmaids.
Exactly. I'm not saying that Tom Brady's Mongo do you, but I'm just saying, you know, yeah, I think
he
that
fits a mold.
There's some genetic material that wouldn't shock me if they were trying to use. So we didn't learn too much about the Waterfords in this first episode.
Well, what about Serena Joy? Do you have anything you want to say about her?
Oh man, territorial to the effing hilt, and for good reason. I mean, I cannot even imagine the jealousy, anger, resentment, all the negative words you can possibly think of that I would feel if I was in this position. I can't even imagine.
Commanders to buy in, okay. But the wives to buy in, man. I mean,
it's because I don't know what the wife's role is yet. Once I figure out what the wife's roles are, I'll understand her motivation more.
It's just hard to think of, like, you know, maybe perhaps 3 or 4 years ago, she was a soccer mom taking someone to oboe lessons or something. And now this is who she is.
No, she wasn't. She never had a kid.
Well, but you get the idea. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Don't know what the perks are of being the wife. And I don't know what makes someone be the material, like your wife material. Why? What does it take to be wife material? I don't know yet. Maybe it's money. Maybe her father paid for her to be in that position. You know, I don't know. I don't know how the society works yet.
Okay.
I think there's as much fear behind her, though, mm-hmm. of getting killed, sent to the colonies, or whatever else may happen to her, as we see in Offred and any of the other women.
I agree. And that's why I questioned when you said that she had rights. I'm like, I think she's as much a slave to the situation as Offred is. It's just, I think she's being, like, psychologically feels a lot of the abuse as well. Maybe she's not getting a part of the ceremony. But I don't think that she is enjoying any of that stuff either. I don't think any of it is like, yeah, you know, I think it's all terrible. I think it's all terrible across the board. And I don't even know that the commander, I mean, it's shedding a sad light on men. If you think that that's how men would want how to make a family or anything, I think probably most men don't want to have to make a family that way, you know, with these other people as a part of the mix, you know?
Oh yeah. What I assume about the whole regime change idea is that this group felt that only this very extreme measure was the only way to get us through whatever this event was that was ruining the United States. They did it, and they did everything. They went whole hog with it, whatever those things were.
Right. Okay, so we'll definitely learn more about Serena Joy in the next couple of episodes. There's 2 other characters, but we didn't learn very much about the Martha, but we learned about Nick a little bit. Nick's the driver.
Nick is the driver.
He is super suspicious to me. I don't know what his scene is. He's very flirty with Offred, which, of course, I can only imagine is a big fat frown face. And other than that, I mean, we don't really know very much about him. He's just
He says things kind of under his breath.
Yeah, not too much.
Kind of, you know, house scuttlebutt kind of stuff.
Sort of. I mean, he wasn't in this too much, but I do think he's going to play a role, and I do kind of feel like he's one of those guys who could go either way right now. Like, he could be one of the bad guys, he could be the eye kind of situation, or he could end up helping her. I don't know. I kind of feel like it's every guy for himself in the situation, so I don't know. Maybe just trying to figure out what he can get out of the situation.
All right.
Let's start talking about the root of the handmaids. beginnings here, and that is when we learn about old Aunt Lydia and Rachel and Leah's school.
Yes.
Aunt Lydia, to me, is like this deranged Mrs. Garrett from the Facts of Life. Because, like, how she's like, girls! And she's like, redheaded, you know. She just has, like, a lot of the mannerisms and the way, of course, you know, they never, like, cattle prodded Tootie, but there's this, like, house marm feel to her that is, like, Mrs. Garrett gone berserk.
Well, we, of course, know her from The Leftovers.
Love Ann Dowd.
Her name is Ann Dowd, and she was in two seasons of The Leftovers. In the first season, she played a very despicable, hateable, not redeemable kind of person. And then in the second season, by the end of it, the whole premise is that the main character is trying to get rid of her. That he doesn't want her to come around anymore. And you don't want it to happen because she's
kind of grown on you.
She's grown on you and you start to understand more about her. So she managed to take the same character and play it both in this shit, terrible way and, oh my God, please don't leave kind of way.
Yeah, which is a little how I feel like Aunt Lydia's personality actually kind of is with the girls, where there was times when I felt like she was sort of being supportive and being like, oh, you're so lucky to be here and all this kind of stuff. And then, and of course, in other ways, she's wicked and torturous and disgusting and awful, you know, so it really goes both ways with her. It turns out that through this Aunt Lydia portion, she explains to all of us the whole reason why we're here as handmaidens and that there's been the plague of infertility from God.
From God. Yes. I think that this regime involves God in a lot of its justifications for everything. The parts when she is acting at all nice and sweet just reek of being disingenuous, you know, because she can whip out with such eye-pluckingly cruel acts, then I can't ever believe it when she's at smiling or anything.
Oh, no. I feel like that stuff is like coming from a place of like her job is to create this reproduction factory. And I think that when you see her being sappy sweet, I do think it's when things are maybe going well from her POV, you know, how she's like, okay, you know, we're going to do this. She does probably feel legitimately good about that moment in time, but it's you're right. It's insincere. It's gross. So it turns out that Aunt Lydia is the head of this school, it appears, and she...
What'd you say? Was it Rachel and what?
Leah. So that's from the Bible. So that's like Rachel couldn't have children. Leah's like the surrogate. So it's like that. She's like the handmaiden, right? So
that tells you a lot then about...
That's the relationship.
If this is a government-sponsored agency and they name it that...
Right, exactly. Obviously, the religion is absolutely 100%, you know, ingrained in everything at this point. So the most telling line that I felt like she used was saying the ordinary is just what you're used to doing and that this will become, as you're getting used to it, it will become ordinary. And I think that's like a very telling line for me. That could be like one of the top 10 lines of the entire whole series is this idea that like there's our whole lives are really wrapped up in this idea of like what's typical, what's normal, what's whatever. And that's just what you've grown up with and what you're small bubble of the world does. But in reality, you know, you could go, you don't have to like go somewhere crazy or something insane has to happen. You can just go, you know, hop on over to, you know, South America or just something. They're going to eat different. They're going to dress different. They're going to say things that are different. They're going to talk different. They're going to have different values. You know, it can be, it's here right now around us. And I think the idea of ordinary is pretty fascinating.
What do they call that? Cold comfort? You know, it's like, it'll be ordinary.
Yeah, like you'll get used to it.
Right.
One of the weirdest thing is how I feel like it's supposed to be all old fashioned, like they're dressed all sort of puritanical in their little wimples and whatnot. And then to hear Aunt Lydia be like, they all wanted to go to their Tinders and their orgies. And also I was like, Tinder? Wait, what? Like it's so weird and modern and yet so not.
Well, and when you said the way that they're dressed, of all of them, her outfit resembles the military the most out of anybody, I thought. I mean, it's not a military uniform, but it does kind of look martial.
She's playing this Aunt Lydia part, like Auntie Lydia, as if she's supposed to be kind of mothering and nurturing to this entire group. But then her dress is the exact opposite of that.
It's not very welcoming for Auntie Lydia, I would say.
No.
I would say everything about Auntie Lydia is just a contrast in terms from the, oh, babies, you're so lucky to be here, to I'm now going to scoop your eye out.
speaking of Scoop Your Eye Out, let's talk about Janine. So there were a couple of other handmaidens that we met in this very first episode. We met Moira, both through flashbacks, and it turns out that she's actually there in the same class with Offred. And we also met Janine, who came in, not unlike many of us, and failed to read the situation for what it was, right? Like, you know, I don't know why she thought once it was cattle prod time that, I don't know. I would have seen Aunt Lydia and I would have noticed the rest of the group. And I may have had some amount of inkling with the machine guns that this was not a good time to like completely
practice your, you know, obnoxious commentary.
Might talk back right. And, you know, be like, rah, rah, rah. And even the first time Aunt Lydia's like, let's have quiet girls, let's be like little mice, like sure, one tiny warning
before they pluck your eye out. Yes.
Oh my god. Yeah. And so for all you guys, you know that we have a daughter who is blind, and so for me that scene was really disgusting. I have a really hard time, even when I've taken a self-defense class and they're like, the first thing you need to do is poke the person's eyes out. And I'm like, yeah, no, see, I have like a problem with that. Like, I don't want to hurt anybody. I wouldn't want to take anyone's vision like that. It, no matter how awful someone was being to me, I would really, I could do a lot of other things to you. I'd even want to kill you before I did that to you. So it's like awful, but it's true. So that was for me, like in the like scenes that really, really, really bothered me. That was a big, big one. Janine was a hotbed of uncomfortable scenes, however.
Absolutely. When we start to hear a little bit more about Janine's backstory, but in the context of her sitting in the center of a circle and the rest of the handmaids sitting around judging what's happened to her.
Oh my God.
She was gang raped, right?
I mean, yes, right. By people she knew, friends.
To think about how far we have come in our current society, where we're just starting to get people to understand that shaming that kind of, being a victim of that kind of situation is not okay. To see it as an example of, you know, now that handmaids are all supposed to turn against her and try and convince her that it was her fault was heartbreaking.
It's so crazy. And I think even like, you know, when we were sort of making the notes for this and you said, remember, put the slut shaming circle. It's so weird because you're right that it's so fresh in our society, the idea that shaming someone who has had any type of sexual assault or even a perceived open sexuality, even so not even maybe that, maybe not even were attacked, but the idea that they're just even comfortable with their sexuality, you can be slut shamed for that. It's not like we as a group grew up with people saying slut shaming.
No way.
Like it's so new that I wish our society was a heck of a lot further along. It's basically the end of that.
And so to know, you know, that in this fictitious future, we turn the corner and like hooked a Yui real quick, yeah, was really scary.
And that we even, they recognized it as such a strong tool for breaking someone down.
Absolutely.
Is like, whoa, that happens all the time, every day, and no one's even recognizing as it. Look, when they want to torture someone into submitting, that's the tool they use. Like, whoa, that's really in your face.
I think every high school girl has figured out that exactly, that's a good way to torture people into submission.
Exactly. But
the handmaids, in some ways, the way that they go to the school together and are indoctrinated together and then a group back together for certain kinds of meetings and stuff like that, it seems less like colleagues, more like sorority or sisterhood or something, you know?
Sort of. They described it at one point that the reason why they walk in twos was for protection, but also for spying on one another. And that the whole point of them sort of being up in each other's business had more to do with telling on each other and making sure that everyone was following the rules.
So they're distrustful sisters?
Distrustful, yeah. And you know, that was pointed out in the episode. Ofgwen mentions later that she says, you know, they're really good at that, making us distrust each other. And I think that's a really another good small tidbit to say, you know, you don't have to necessarily be slut-shaming someone, but just planting those seeds of distrust, yep, or questioning of different people is like really enough to start really ruining lives.
I heard what she said about you.
Exactly. She laughed about it.
She laughed about it.
That's, yeah, the best way to get somebody right away. You just say, she talked about that thing. She laughed about it. And you just walk off. And it doesn't matter. The other person fills in all the blanks, okay? And they're now paranoid and upset. That was basically our very frightening opening to Aunt Lydia and her world. We did get to also meet Off Glenn then. She turns out to be the partner for Offred, who is like her shopping partner.
And apparently they've been going through the motions of having some kind of relationship for weeks or maybe longer.
I think a long time.
And they have exchanged only the required blessed be type.
May the Lord open.
Yeah, platitudes. And that's it.
So today was the day that they decided to actually share a little bit more with one another. And it was prompted by the ice cream shop and having a sort of a shared memory of that, like, this used to be an ice cream shop. And, you know, they had the best ice cream here, better than sex. And in that moment, Off Glenn, like, actually was like a human, you know, with Offred. And that sort of spurred this conversation of, like, what was your life before? What were other things life like before for you? And it turns out that Off Glenn, who's played by Alexis Bledel, for all you Gilmore Girl lovers, that would be Rory. She looks frighteningly older than Rory ever did.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if that's a choice or that just happened. It turns out that she's gay and she had a wife and she had a son, Oliver, who she said would be almost 5. I was really happy that we got to see them open up to each other. And I was they already seemed like, okay, like I kind of like this duo. You know, I was really kind of into them being pals.
Rory was never my favorite character in Gilmore Girls. And she wasn't my favorite actress in Gilmore Girls. You know, she was hired young from being a model. So she was, you know, didn't have a lot of acting experience and it showed a lot early. But then she didn't seem to ever get much better at a certain point.
Well, how did you feel in this? Was she better, do you guys think?
I do think she was 100%
better than really any role we've seen her in. I mean, the traveling pants, no way.
Oh, yeah. I didn't ever travel in the pants.
No?
No, neither did I, but intrigue.
Even like, was it Sin City that she was in?
She was in Sin City for a minute.
Played a little bit edgier character in that, was just really kind of dead behind the eyes.
A little, yeah. It didn't work.
So we all liked her a lot better in this one. And I definitely feel like, you know, her add to the show, I feel like being someone familiar. And I kind of wonder if they did this as casting. If you think about it, they took Peggy Olson and Rory Gilmore and very ordinary girls, right? Very ordinary girls. One's like a working individual trying to get up through the ranks of corporate America and, you know, doing everything like that. We had the other one who like grew up, we saw her all the way through school. And now as an audience, we're seeing our two girls thrust into this position of being like going through these ceremonies and all this stuff. So I kind of wonder if they actually used our memories of them and our little bits of information about these two people and what we thought about them to kind of make it that much more gross that this is what was happening with them.
For the entire run of Mad Men, I don't know if they ever referred to Peggy as a woman. Mm-mm. I think they only ever said girl.
Joan only referred to the entire secretarial pool as girls.
Now, I love the book. So when I heard they were making it into a series, I was all over that and was following it, you know, when it was going to come out, everything about it, and watching a lot of the trailers and everything. And I literally did not pick up on that it was Rory as one of the other handmaids until like the day before it was released.
Yeah, me neither.
And I'm curious if they did that on purpose, if they didn't let people know that she was going to be one of the principal actors in it.
It's funny how this show has had public demonstrations with people wearing the handmade red robes at places like South by Southwest in Austin. But then it's also when you talk about it just with your friends, they have no idea what you're talking about. So in one way, it's been very public. In another way, it's flown completely under the radar.
Right.
You know, we've met all the different characters. There are a few environmental things that we thought we'd want to just make mention of in this episode because they help define this effed up world that we're in and how far it has gone into this not even conservative or old timey. I mean, it's like a completely new twist on things that is worth keeping track of the little bits that they show us that's new in every episode.
Yeah, so you pointed out to me like when Off Fred and Off Glenn were off shopping, That's hard to say. They went to the grocery store.
Is that a new girl?
It is. Off grocery. Off shop. So in shopping, Paul had to point out to me that the products didn't have words on them. You know, they zoomed in on the products and I was like, okay, yeah, that's like, you know, a picture of a cow. Got it. That's milk. But they didn't say the word milk. And it wasn't until the girl, you know, who had said, oh, I saw on the news, you know, that it's going well or something like that. Then she like looked horrified and was like, I didn't read it. And so then it was like, okay, so they took the words off the products. This still seems weird to me because it feels like how much they had in place so quickly. And then also it's like these women are not young. Like they were in college and stuff. Like this all just happened 3 years ago. They're not going to forget how to read.
Right.
You know, like so it all felt like I don't know. It was real twisty during this part. I felt weird about it. We also found out that they use tokens to pay for things and that it was important that they take credit for things and not let the Marthas take credit. Again, not super clear what the handmaid's job is, bigger scheme in this whole classification thing. I get it that it's all about reproduction, but the fact that they're out shopping and then the fact that they need to be like garnering a lot of like credit for things seems like, oh my gosh, why are they having to make themselves seem valuable in a household where they are the most valuable commodity? In theory, it seems so strange to have to kind of reconcile all that.
Oh yeah, every part of their role is a paradox. Like being the most valued, but then being a slave at the same time.
Yeah, and like being like I wrote this on our Facebook page, but being the most important part of our society and the idea that you're healthy and fertile. But I'm also going to slap you around, mentally and emotionally abuse you, withhold, you know, proper accommodations, all this stuff. But also your body needs to be growing another human. It's all just so mixed up that I don't know.
Why is her room such a shithole? I mean, the rest of the house looks great.
I think it's about deprivation and not being feeling like you're a welcome member of this household.
And it's steps being taken for not her generation, but the next generation to come.
You're right. Yes.
So then they won't ever know how to read and they won't even have an idea of what their value is as a fertile member of society. They will only know their role as someone who carries a baby and then maybe moves on to the next house.
There's two main ritual scenes that we need to talk about that happened.
Right.
We were sort of talking about what was like more upsetting to anyone. And it was interesting who felt things were more upsetting than other portions were. So for instance, the two that we zoned in on, though there were many ritualistic moments that really happened, was of course the reproduction ceremony, if you will. What are they like date night on The Bachelor, you know? They get, what do they call it? Like a private time or something, some crap like that. She got the rose, if you will. And then the whole rapist being punished scene. When we talked about what was like the most horrifying scene, I said it was Hannah getting ripped away from Offred.
I thought it was the slut shaming scene, really. That was more powerful for me.
And I thought that the rapist scene was a big deal.
And when we talked about it, you thought that was like a no-brainer, right? You were kind of like, well, of course, the worst scene that we saw was the man getting beat. And me and Kate were like, wait, huh? Like, wait a minute. You thought the worst thing that happened on The Handmaid's Tale this week was that man getting punched and kicked?
No, I thought it was a scene worth mentioning.
We had to have a little laugh, ladies, in that moment, just to not be like, all right, circle up, women.
Well, I don't feel bad for the guy exactly, except it felt like less like this is a legitimate way to punish a rapist as much as it's actually a terrific way to let these women let off all the steam that has built up.
That's what I thought intriguing. It was. I did too. And so here was the thing. So it was crazy again that they would put what a lot of people would consider pregnant women to be fragile, right? And especially if they have all these miscarriages and everything. Oh my gosh, any one of these women could be in the first few weeks of pregnancy, right? We don't know. I mean, there are ongoing stuff happening, so we don't know when they're ever pregnant. But yet they're being encouraged to punch and kick and be a part of these very visceral, very physical fights, which, again, seems to be very anti, you know, going and laying in bed and being on bed rest. Put your feet up. Don't jostle the baby, you know, all that kind of stuff. Janine, I'm sure, wasn't a part of the actual big old fight when she was there with her big pregnant belly. But at the same time, it was like any one of those women could be a couple weeks pregnant or anything. That seemed odd.
At their most fragile state.
You would think, right? Right. It just seems crazy. Then also, I don't quite understand what must have transpired for them to have figured out that they had to create a system that lets off steam.
Right.
Because some biz had to have happened in like that first year or something in order to create such an insane situation where it's like, we have to give these women some amount of like empowerment for these like small period of time. And we need to let them do this. Didn't all seem kind of like, what the?
I wonder how many commanders had to die before
or like dicks were pulled off,
right,
or something, or
was held up in the town square.
Oh my God, right? Didn't something had to have happened, you guys, right? I don't know. We have had flashbacks from Offred that were happy flashbacks of her previous before life with being at college with Moira, and really beautiful memories of her daughter at the beach and at the aquarium and all these really nice scenes. But I wonder if there'll be some flashbacks to maybe several years back when this all started, and maybe there will be some handmaids like fucking going ape shit, you know? I hope so too. So we have to talk about the ceremony scene, you guys. We can't avoid it, despite the fact that my co-hosts here are brother and sister, and this could not be a more uncomfortable situation for us all to discuss, really. But I have to say, I was really prepared by the rest of you guys that this was going to be awful, 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 awful. So when it happened, I know this is going to sound weird, but it was all a little vanilla. Like, it wasn't quite as scary and awful as I thought it was going to be. As a relief, I say that. I was really scared they were going to, like, shove a sock in her mouth, slap her about the head the whole time. You know, Nick came in there. I thought, oh my God, is he going to be, like, behind her? Like, I was imagining these really insane scenarios. What happened was very, I mean, awful. And disclaimer on every single comment ever made that this scenario is insane and awful. Given that if this was HBO, I don't think they would have gotten off this easy.
No.
That's my right. opinion.
The part that hit me, I think, the hardest, because with you, I didn't think that it was as harsh as they probably could have played it up to be. Definitely being able to kind of hear her thoughts in her head made some of it go a little easier. But then at the end of the ceremony, when Serena lets go of her wrists and you can see the marks left on her skin, then just knowing how she's holding her down, that part was rougher than any of the
actual sex, yeah. Right? So I agree with you. It was more about the psychological fuck, if you will, yeah, between Serena and Offred.
Absolutely.
And the grossness that occurred between the two of them.
Woman
as
to
much
woman.
As, yeah, because as much as there was the whole situation with, yeah, that's going on at the end of the bed here, but you're really being awful to me.
Holding me here.
Yeah. And then it got even worse when it's over and she's like, get out, you know, yeah, and like yelling at her. And it was like, I said to Paul, she says, well, it would be better chances if I actually laid here for a while. And she's like, I don't care, get out. I was saying, does that mean like, was it her anger that got the best of her, or does she really doesn't care that much about her getting pregnant?
I think she cares. She wants to have a baby in the house, but I think that the anger just is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Very angry person, Serena Joy.
Serena Joy, of all the names, right? So because we've seen 2 and 3, we're not going to go through our normal area where we would talk a lot about predictions and where we think everyone's going. We would really like to interact with all of you guys a lot more on the Facebook page.
The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu-Gilead Online. Gilead, since it hasn't been mentioned yet, is the name of the government, or maybe even the country, that the Handmaids and all of the other characters live in now. Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com, that's DaileyReview.com, Facebook or Twitter, or wherever you find us, please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and dad.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.